In discussing the Charlie Sheen phenomenon on melting titanium with Ion last night, we're talking away with Ion, and someone wanted to comment on it, Jane Russell. So Jane turned out to be this amazing person. She was born on June 21st, 1921. She's the one who created the bra, or is associated with creating the bra. It turns out Jane was the J. Edgar Hoover of Hollywood. She had the stuff on everybody. And I don't know if we're supposed to tell this, but we got into it pretty quickly, and then she said, the greatest invention was the tape recorder. And she would plant the tape recorder in the hi-fi stereo at her and others' parties and tape all the conversations. She said it was bitch versus bitch, a dog-eat-dog, you know, terrible world in Hollywood. And you had to know things to stay in the game. And this gossip information is the key to survival. So she built up the most powerful dossier in everybody. So she was the godmother of Hollywood. And guess what? She started debriefing people through the years. Marlon Brando became a friend. Martin Sheen became a friend of hers. And old Charlie was an inheritant of the information cache. So Charlie's sitting on Jane Russell's work.
Okay, so where are the tapes?
I had told us they're deposited in an institution up near San Francisco. We went on for an hour or more with Jane, maybe an hour and a half, and she laid out the whole history, the 20th century.
So
her favorite song, the key song for what she knew is Mac the Knife. So ask me a question, Jane.
Okay, so what's the scoop on Charlie Sheen then? What's she have to say?
We discussed him with Ion in his borderline case. It's part of, you know, the winds are being released. They were released on January 12th as part of the Blood Moon Cataclysmic Jubilee Year. These are the Bible terms for the Mayan calendar 2012 phenomenon. That's happening now. And so all institutions are, you know, all leadership iconic institutions are being wiped out. And this Charlie Sheen is going to be a major exposer of the Hollywood stuff. And
see, I told you.
Yeah, you told us all yesterday. And the charisma of Hollywood actors, that is an important lifestyle, that it's important to be that way, is going to be rotted away.
This is raining pure hell on all the agents that represent this, the publicists, everything. He's done a pattern interruption like Hollywood has never seen before, ever. This is surpasses what Mel Gibson did, which, you know, was completely self-destructive on a completely other lunatic level. This guy's making it a legal matter with major money involved. And his whole team of people and the cast and crew. I mean, this is a big deal. Whether people like it or not, it's huge in terms of how it's going to interrupt the processing of how movies are made and insurance policies for actors. It's going to affect the unions, everything. It already has.
Ian was saying along those lines, it's part of the people taking their own power. They're not going to rely on some external ideal lifestyle that Hollywood represented for the last 100 years. They're not going to rely on that anymore for their own sense of self-achievement, respect, sovereignty, Godhead. But here's the important thing. Mel Gibson came up, and he personally would love to do what Charlie's doing and tried to do it, but he blew it. But he's cheering Charlie on, but a bit jealous that he's not able to do it. That he didn't get to do what Charlie's doing.
He's talked to Mel on the phone. That was in the interview. And all the major top-of-the-line superstar AA people, Alcoholic Anonymous, they're all calling him. That's what's cracking me up. It's like all the people behind the scenes that are known for being major, you know, party animals have all come to his corner, and they're all really jealous of what he's doing.
But supporting it.
Oh, totally. But they're supporting it in an unusual way because the A-listers, the Bs, and even some of the Cs all having problems with the studios and pay and how much money actors make versus what the studios make, and then also being able to be under the complete control of agents and publicists who decide who you're going to go out with, what people are going to see, what you're going to say, where you're going to show up, what you're going to wear, all that other stuff. It's all being smashed to pieces by this. So it's being embraced by a lot of Hollywood people, even though they don't like the delivery method.
I think Ion said, you know, he's coming off the cocaine, so his brain's a little hyper, you know, from what he's been doing to himself the last few months. But Jane Russell drops in. She said that she died. She checked out because she knew the shit was going to hit the fan in this situation. And she was a key person who held the cards all along. And she thought, well, I better just check out right now in case I get caught in the crossfire. The point was never to use it. she would say something about Barry Goldwater or something, and those that knew the story from their angle knew that she knew, mm-hmm. because they'd be surprised at what little facts she'd contribute to the conversation. And she, that's what you do. You just let everybody know that you know something that they didn't know, and you contribute to the topic, but you never pull out your whole cards, because once you do that, it's over. So she never really used the information completely. But she been around so long, she knew everything from everybody about everything and where all the bodies were buried all these decades. So here is Charlie. He's telling everything, or going to, or trying to. That's mm-hmm. not what she would do. She would never get to a peak period. But we're at the end of time, so I guess the Jane Russell syndrome, the J. Edgar Hoover syndrome, is over. And Charlie's going to be the last information dispeller. And then I was talking to Ian about, well, the media will make a lot of ratings for this, but this is the last story, apparently.
If things get too rough, he can always go back to Carlos Estevez.
There's Ian. Geez, he knows the real name. Okay, Ian, are there factors that we're not considering the Charlie Sheen incident right now?
Well, it's taking down an example of what was tried and true, because everybody believes Hollywood. They trust Hollywood. And all that happens is it comes back around that, you know, hey, if that Martinez boy can go have blow with them backstage, then I guess it's not too big a secret, huh? James, with great authority, knows what goes on. James has firsthand knowledge of exactly how it goes down.
No, no. So yes, I do. I do.
It's still
no, exactly.
thy time. It's still thy time. It's kind of like, this is the best, biggest thing since going, and poor James doesn't even have to go to rehab. It's way cool.
This story is pure trash, right? But it's managed to interfere and interject almost every major network. And with everything else that's going on in the world that's 5,000 million times more popular, this now clarifies and cleanses the truth of the fact of the matter is it just doesn't matter anymore. That when you take 35 minutes out of ABC primetime to cover a guy reacting to major cocaine use, and then it's CNN takes 60 minutes for it, and then 2020 takes it, and then TMZ takes it, for what? It really tells you how powerful and morally bankrupt everything is now for people to actually think that's a real issue.
He opens it up and says it real plain. Yes, I have a wedge, and we flip coins to see who's going to sleep in the middle of a great big bed with his two salacious house mothers looking after his kids, who, by the way, now have gone not to the ex-wife, but to the ex-wife's mother, because she's on her way to rehab, too. Rehab is the way to go. He's outed it in such a way that he's saying it himself, so they won't be running around whispering about him. He's saying, yeah, it's great. I'm a high on the new drug, Charlie.
And that Ground show, by pool. The way, is modeled after who he really is. That's why they made it.
What his point is, if they really knew that the producers of Two and a Half Men were making $60 million an episode, why should he be crucified for saying, okay, I want $2 million? Well, because you're the highest paid actor going. Yes, but how many dollars are you going to get if I say I ain't doing it no more? So now he says, okay, fine, you happy-go-lucky folks. I'll do it for $3 million, and I'm going to get paid whether I do the show or not. And I know how this all plays out, so let's play.
The other thing that came out during Melting Titanium is one person is very angry about this whole Charlie Sheen domination of the media. And you know who that is, James? It's Mr. Muammar Gaddafi in Libya.
yeah.
That's Muammar's brother, I guess, right?
Yeah. And see, there's the global membrane, the global theater. He's affected by this. His whole revolution, defense, whatever he's trying to do there, where the camera points.
That's right.
It's on Charlie, it's not on him.
My people love me. My people will die for me.
Just stand still and watch News 11. I'll show you who's going to die.
One thing, Jane was not impressed with any Bilderbergers or any of the so-called Orwellian political controllers, presidents and that. She said the real power was where she was, in the daily TV landscape, and knowing the gossip. She was a major source for Hedda Hopper. She knew that this entertainment world was the real world of power. It's this information world, that's where people listen and engage in. That's where power is to survive, if you want to survive. And she wanted to survive so she could keep having fun.
And she said the money was good, too. She did it for the money.
Did it for the money to survive.
When you said she said survival, she was having fun.
Now, the one thing we want to know for sure that hasn't been cleared up, and maybe, Carolyn, you could help us, are they going to calculate Charlie as a Schedule 1 or a Schedule 2 pharmaceutical?
His whole body, you mean? His whole body is a pharmaceutical chemical?
Yeah, he's doing Charlie now, he said.
Yeah, he's doing Charlie. There you go.
So if it's Schedule 1, then you can't even get a license for it, even in California. If it's Schedule 2, then yes, even some of the pain management clinics can start providing Charlie.
Okay, Ion's statement was pretty interesting. You said that it was the way she positioned herself in the Outlaw that established the pinup mean?
That's where it all began, as a pinup, because she was showing more than you could show. Now, of course, you look at the picture today and you go, wait a second, the kids that are on set looking at movies have on less than what she was displayed. But in those days, it was just too radical. It was too far out.
So there were problems with the censorship of the production code over the way her ample cleavage was displayed. When the movie was finally passed, it had a general release in 1946. During that time, she was kept busy doing publicity and became known nationally. So there was a big hoopla about her for several years before the movie came out. I mean, that's the ultimate in publicity.
Remember, in those days, things were a little different then. You know, if you had a movie, you'd talk about it forever and ever and ever and ever and ever and ever. People had to actually write things in the newspaper. The pomp and circumstance regarding and behind a movie release was huge.
Contrary to countless incorrect reports in the media since the release of The Outlaw, Russell did not wear the specially designed underwire bra, the first of its kind, that Howard Hughes constructed for the film. According to Jane's 1988 autobiography, she was given the bra, decided it had a mediocre fit, and wore her own bra on the film set with the straps pulled down. What's significant with the straps being pulled down?
You're exposing shoulder, Bob.
With measurements of 38D. Now, she's saying she had 44D.
Well, you kind of grow.
And standing 5'7", Russell was more statuesque than most of her contemporaries. She was not in another movie until 1946 when she played Joan Kenwood in Young Widow for RKO. We talked about this last night. The very distraction that Charlie Sheen creates or American Idol creates has saved the world from economic disaster. Because nobody can focus on any one issue and then make a stopping mechanism. And that's why the Chinese are on the sidelines. They don't understand the media dynamics. They're trying to stop the world, and they can't.
Look at the news that Charlie averted and diverted, the government shutdown.
And this distraction, and I think Jane Russell understood that, this distraction is the source of our wealth, not whether we got gold or not.
Is it possible for Charlie Sheen to maintain his distraction? Does he have to make the story juicier? Do we need to see more blood and guts in the car accident as we drive past and observe this over and over and over again? Or is something going to interrupt his pattern that's bigger to keep everybody distracted from what's happening with Congress?
Well, no, it'll actually come along when Charlie starts outing the Bill of Particulars. Exactly what he's been hooping about. Once that happens, all of a sudden it's kind of like, oh, there is something to do this.
The last night, Ian, you said that it would go to court or that it would be settled out of court.
We said that it would be threatened, but they cannot have. So what Charlie wants is to have this into a position where he can enter evidence into his case. Because once it gets into the actual record, then the Fair Reporting Act of 74 allows TMZ even faithful access to it. And with that proof as evidence, then it becomes uncounterable. And if they get up and say, no, that's not the way it is, then you have perjury issues. So they don't want this to get to a position where their pennies get to be aired. They want it in a position where he will get his $322.5 million settlement.
That's
really saying, don't you speak of this anymore.
So the people should stop cheering him on and say, turn down the $322 million and get the stuff in the record if you're a real revolutionary, Charlie and Martin.
But he's not a revolutionary. He's just saying, don't go getting on me. Don't get in my stuff because I did things not, quote, kosher. Pardon the pun. Not kosher. When you're sitting around there talking about how wonderful it is to be the king eating pig in a kosher kitchen. That's all he's saying. He's doing the exact same thing that MGM has done all along. He's playing their game on their field. And that's what we say. They all rest in peace till Bob gets there. Well, the same thing here. It would be the same thing as saying, take on the trust, break the trust. Well, that's not going to happen because all of your paid legislative branch takes advantage of those trusts and those trust laws. So try to get that one through the House. Now, they'll shut the government down, but don't you screw with my trust. Don't you make that clear and apparent.
Oh, okay. So what's the parallel and the metaphor in Hollywood?
Charlie, don't you use my field, my network. Isn't it interesting that it's their network that Charlie's using to get his word out regarding them?
That's right. That's right.
He's
right.
Manipulating it all. Now, here he is on their TV talking about the perils of them.
What is it that MGM always did that you're saying he's doing?
They would play spin the story. It's like when they get on The View and somebody stomps off. That's not a problem. Well, it's not a problem because 6 extra million people show up to watch the show.
That's right.
You watch Joy throw her hair back and get all pissy.
Has Charlie explained his motive to get the stuff in court and to threaten that and then get the $322 million, which is the number for Skull and Bones, is he's explained that to Alex Jones?
That's another conversation.
Yeah. See, there's the revolutionary Alex Jones. Anyways.
Well, you brought up Alex Jones, Ion, because he was the one that was on The View that stomped off, or somebody stomped off.
There's a whole thing going on behind the scenes that nobody. Alex Jones is now on the map because of Charlie Sheen. That was an agreement made behind the scenes.
Regarding Charlie Sheen, is he coming into his power or is he delusional, Ion?
What's the difference?
Can you explain why some people get into a position of addiction?
We don't know addiction. The only reason any human creator does anything is for the thought that they'll feel better in the doing of it. Some people are addicted to breathing.
MJ says, Charlie sure seems like he was, has, is coming into his power. I sense a hint of Ionian logic from his lips. His utterances resonate well with me. I love it and eat it up. Can't see enough. Winning. You know how Charlie always goes winning, James?
Winning.
Yeah, that's good. That's real good. Everybody's saying that all over town. It's the coffee stores. Anthony in Arizona says, Charlie Sheen is a drug-addled moron. Who cares about him? The point is what he's done in media based upon what he's saying. And Ion just brought it up, perfectly stated what he's done here, because now he's interrupted everything. And it just goes to show that a traffic accident is the most fascinating thing now in all the media environments.
The interstitialist from Megalopolis says, so she wouldn't, meaning Jane Russell, so she wouldn't piss off Howard Hughes by not wearing his strapless bra. So the whole image was having a strapless bra. That was the new revolution.
Well, the underwire. And what she found was it was no different than a bustier that they already had, but this was a bottomless bustier, and it was very uncomfortable. So she wore her regular, and got famous later with the Playtex company of the Cross Your Heart business, where she wore her foundational garment, but just dropped her straps for the salacious picture that, of course, came out of the Outlaw.
So the actual bra that Hughes made never got sold?
Oh, yes, it got sold, but she didn't wear it. It was all the tout.
So people don't know they wore the wire bra and didn't know that it's better to do the non-wire bra.
For those that liked the extra support and wasn't offended by that extra girding that was potentially uncomfortable, then there you go.
when we were talking to Jane, she said what really helped her cross the heart bra and the whole uplifting business was when latex bras were invented or when latex became available. So then she didn't have to depend on the wire, which cuts off circulation.
She didn't wear the wire, and yet it got out that she was wearing a wire bra.
She probably started wearing them, but then as latex came along, she moved on to latex.
It's not about the bra. What it's about is if your mammary glands are bigger than a goose egg, you find that it actually has a gravity effect of pulling against you. The cross your heart, where it lifts and separates, it balances through the back and over the shoulders more comfortably your mammary glands. If you look at her, what she's famous for is her posture. Well, if you know anything about mammary glands and you have them for a while, they seem to tug against you, okay? So with this process of posture, it helps balance the weight of the breast that would pull against the back. The lift and separate allows that to become a balancing. It'd be like picking up 1 5-gallon bucket of water and carrying it. It puts you off balance. But if you have 2 5-gallon buckets of water, it's twice as heavy, but you can carry it easier because it's more balanced.
She does not do the wire, and because her image is so well photographed, people started buying the wire bra.
Yeah, of course.
And the secret is that she didn't wear one and wouldn't wear one because it's uncomfortable.
Correct.
So she went for the visual strapless effect, and that was okay. And then latex comes in a few years later and gets rid of the wire bra.
Well, they still have wires today, Bob. You still have wires today.
Oh, okay.
But you have many choices other than a whalebone corset anymore.